Hey, welcome to Taking It Down, a pop culture podcast brought to you by the Alabama Take. I'm your host, Blaine Duncan, and today I'll be talking to contributor to the Alabama Take, Adam Morrow, about the first two episodes of the third season of the famous Netflix show Stranger Things. And later on, we'll discuss an odd HBO show called Years and Years. So let's grab a cup of coffee and start taking it down. All right, I'm being joined here by Adam Morrow, contributor to the Alabama Take, also musician, probably well known for playing in bands all across the nation in Alabama. So, but we're here to talk, first of all, about Stranger Things. Season 3 released on the 4th of July. So let's give that sort of an overview. What are your thoughts going in to Stranger Things?
I hadn't realized how long it had been since Season 2. Came out roughly Halloween of 2017. Is that right? 2017.
Yeah. And for the characters in show, it would have been Halloween of their last year. But for us, it was Halloween 2 years ago.
Right.
Almost.
Right. So I guess I could have been a little more proactive and gone back and watched. But I mean, the charming thing about this show, especially at this point, is how quickly it just, you know, you're kind of right back there. Even without a lot of backstory. Yeah. And it comes back pretty quick, but
I had totally forgotten the ending of season two, and I don't know if that's my own fault or the fault of the shows. That's something I kind of wanted to think about.
It's something that I thought a lot about. You've seen two episodes. We're going to talk about the first two episodes, but
having
seen.
And we'll spoil those two episodes just for people listening. We'll spoil the first two, but none beyond that.
Having seen the whole thing at this point, we wrapped it up last night, and this isn't a spoiler at all, but thinking about the show itself, you know, it's obviously about the details of the monsters of, you know, the Russians or whoever these corrupt entities are, but it's really about a group of friends growing up. And that those emotional beats that you kind of look back on, I remembered all of those, but all of the details of, like, you know, how the upside down works or why a certain body, like government body, was trying to do a thing or like what the motivations were, those kind of, I don't know, maybe it's intentional that they get lost, but they definitely kind of disappear. You know what I mean? At least in my memory.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That brings me to what I wanted to start with. Why do you think it's so popular? Because if I check my social media timeline, it is full of Stranger Things. Or if you go on Facebook or Twitter and mention it, people want to talk about this show. And I think a lot of people watched it. Why do you think it's got such a huge appeal? Because it's popular with kids, I think. And when I say kids, I mean like teenagers and even younger maybe. But it's also popular with people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. People really attach to this show. What's that appeal, do you think? Because I've been thinking about
that. It's like
a
funny sweet spot on a very surface level of, you know, if you grew up when, you know, one of the first things you see in this, not one of the first things, but you're very quickly introduced to this, like, Technicolor mall that's been built in Hawkins.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, like, for people that are a little bit older who maybe are looking back on this and saying, well, that's what my childhood/adolescence was like. That's one thing. Or like people, I grew up in the 90s. So like that kind of watching the death of the mall, and like, in a way, that's how I remember a mall looking when I was a kid, but not how it looked when I was a teenager. You know what I mean? It was, that whole phase was over by that point, as were all of the trends that they're into. But there's also just the very simple, thinking about a high school kid being into it or a middle school kid, or I don't know how young you would go with wanting to watch this program, but, you know, it's ultimately just about growing up and trying to figure that out. And I think you can look at the character and say, I was that kid, or I am that kid, or whatever. There's a lot of projection that can happen.
Yeah. I've got a coworker who has a child, maybe first grade, and he's into it. So there you go.
This would have scared the shit out of me when I was in first grade.
I think it would have been. Well, I don't know. I was watching a lot of weird stuff. I was taking a lot of stuff in at a young age. So that mall, how badly did that make you want to go back to the mall at that age?
Well, the mall doesn't, you know, it saying at that age is a good thing, because malls never looked like that, really, you know, but like in your, what you build up in your mind, you know, that was not that I was maybe the prime age to like go hang out at the mall, but that's, you definitely have like this image of that being it.
Oh, it was for me. It was.
But there's no way it looked, it wasn't that bright and shiny. You know what I mean? I mean, it was definitely a time where things were like, I started thinking about that compared to like the conventional now way of doing it, where to make like a Tuscaloosa reference that I'll explain really quick, like a Midtown Village kind of thing, you know, where like you kind of drive up to your store and you walk around outside and it's, there's green areas and we just have different values now in terms of like, not values, but like what we value in a public space. Whereas, you know, just blast people with commercialism and color and excitement in this, these early episodes.
Yeah. And what is that saying?
I mean, I think it's, you know, you start thinking about the 80s being, if you think through the lens of like a Reaganomics kind of thing or a greed is good kind of thing. Not that these kids are necessarily thinking about it, but, you know, it's like an exciting new era. Lots of color, lots of new styles, all this stuff just right in your face. I don't know. What do you think? You say that the mall was those things for you.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I thoroughly remember. One of my clear, a very clear memory for me growing up to be in 12, 13, 14 years old is getting to go to the mall. Because, and the great thing about it was that I could wander alone at the mall. Mm. You know, that was, I didn't have to stay in JCPenney with, in the women's department with my mom. You know, I could walk down to the bookstore and I could, and I picked up every Stephen King book and debated which one did I want to spend my money on this particular week. Because, you know, we went maybe once a week, maybe two times a month. And it was the specialness of them all. I think they do a pretty good job of capturing that. But let's dive into some of the specifics of, let's just start with episode one of season three. Susie, Do You Copy is the name of this episode. So we get some, an overview would be reintroduced to the kids as if you need it. Those kids stand out really well. I didn't forget anything about them. We do get a bit of reminder that there's this guy, Billy, who had come to town last year.
Yep.
And kind his of sister.
Kind of a minor, like a low-level bad guy last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Low-level antagonist going on there. And Steve's not going to college. Steve's in the ice cream shop. And Dustin's come home from science camp. And that's kind of that catches us up to date, other than maybe saying that Mike and Elle are very much in their relationship.
And very much Lucas, in their, yeah.
Yeah, they, and then Lucas and Max kind of.
The Hoppers, so, you know, dismay.
Yeah.
In this relationship.
So what did you think about the first episode? What kind of things jumped out at you? What did you notice anything that I didn't? What's happening there?
I mean, they did a really good job, and I'm trying to just keep it to the first episode or two of putting all of these characters. You know, we talked about to start this episode off the time jump that happened both in the show and in the reality of filming, and specifically filming with teenagers, young teenagers, where if you go back and watch season one after watching one of these episodes, it is like jarring how much older these kids are, because they caught them on the, you know, both sides of that huge growth spurt. I mean, some of them are giants now. Two of the guys, Mike and Will. I'm sure they would like tower over us at this point. These are big dudes all of a sudden. But they're also, you know, you have that happen. You have the demise of Steve. You know, he was Mr. Cool Guy in the first season that you really wanted to like just, I mean, he really needed a good punch in the face. And then now it opens and you're like, man, this this poor guy. This is how is things already gone so poorly for him.
Yeah, I love him. You know, he throws the hat off because his hair is his best aspect. He's great,
and he's still worried about that, even though he's like slinging ice cream. Which, you know, whatever job you do, do it with pride for sure. But
yeah, Steve, could they not get the could they not get the Baskin Robbins name for the show because that was all?
You know, I was trying to pick out a saw Taco Bell for sure, a Orange Julius,
their Burger King's in the background.
Yeah, they got everything. But mm-hmm. not Baskin Robbins. The Chips Ahoy, that has to be an excuse just to play that song perpetually, right?
I guess. Or put him in that ridiculous costume.
It's the costume. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had Billy, and at the very end of episode one, Billy is drug into some kind of warehouse, abandoned warehouse.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And of course, everybody quickly knows what happens to him because we're going to cover that second episode. He's comes back, seems like him, maybe not him. I haven't watched past the second episode, so what I know is that he is getting these violent images and he's acting extremely strange, kind of an alien, possession kind of thing going on, except to me seems like
he's definitely like battling for his own to control his own consciousness, I guess.
Yeah,
it kind of reminded me, and I know this is more maybe my thing than something that you were spending a lot of time with, but there's a lot of scenes in Harry Potter where Harry is kind of wrestling with control of his own thoughts, and it seemed like that was kind of a I don't know, an influence, maybe too strong a word, but that was the most similar thing in like this kind of genre of storytelling that I could think of.
You think that they consciously did that or just reminded you of it?
No, it just reminded me of that idea of there's this evil kind of trying to take you over, but you know, what's your response to it?
I kind of just put it on pause in my mind. I thought, well, okay, this is going to be, he's either possessed or the Upside Down has exchanged him for another Billy or something like that's going on. And I just sort of put a pin in it in my mind because I knew it'd be resolved or at least revealed in like episode 3 or 4.
Yeah. So. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with the details of the mechanics of how the story moves along, you know, like things like that don't always seem the most important in this show. It's kind of more about like, you know, why is Billy such a prick? Why is he the one that they abduct? There has to be a reason for all of this. You know what I mean? Like, what about that character? What about it being, you know, he's got a sister who's getting closer to Elle and the dudes, all this kind of thing. I got one thought that I had when he's at the pool, you know, and things are kind of zoning in and out. That is like,
you're talking about now, are we in episode 2 now where he's become whatever has happened to him after the warehouse?
Right. And he goes to his shift at the pool as a lifeguard.
Yeah.
And he's just like getting these white flashes that he sees and pouring sweat. And I couldn't help but think it's been so hot and humid in Alabama that this is just like normal life, you know?
Yeah.
This is how I feel when I walk outside to my car. It's terrible.
We've all felt it.
Yeah.
But no, something's up with him beyond.
Something's wrong.
He's in Indiana in the 80s. I don't know if climate change is 100% full force in Indiana in the
80s. They still had pleasant days.
Not only that, the pleasant days, but he's got a row of soccer moms. Would they have been soccer moms in the 80s? He's got a row of stay-at-home moms.
Yeah.
Who are really eyeing him up and down.
Uh-huh.
And he almost gets a hookup with Mike's mom.
Mike's mom.
Isn't that right? It's Mike's.
Yeah.
Oh, what'd you think about that?
I mean, this is
in that first episode which is how he ended up injured.
Yeah, it is. And when he disappeared, I thought episode 2, if he comes back from this and still goes and meets Mike's mom at the Motel 6, this would just be amazing.
Yeah.
Billy would be just a sleazy legend. But, you know, I can't help whenever I see Mike's mom, but think of her as anyone but a Don Draper moment in time.
Yeah.
So that
she was totally one of Don's ladies. I forgot about that.
And she was like one of the stable ones who kind of seemed to like put him in his place and understand him.
Yep. She was the doctor, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. She got ditched for Megan. Little spoiler alert there, but if that can still be spoiled for you, that's on you. So
10-year-old spoiler alert there. Yep. Did you have those kind of possible hookups going on when you were growing up? Did you know of any teenage guys hooking up with somebody's mom?
No.
I think that honestly happened around Soul Agent. I really do.
I bet it had to have happened somewhere in Northport, but not in my crew for sure.
No, not in my crew. Well, I don't know if possibly, but they kept it fairly well hidden. There was always rumors of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems pretty on the nose what's going on there with these women that are bored with their 80s existence. You know what I mean? Trying to find something else to, I don't know, get out of bed for in the morning. Then they're little shit kids that are running around the pool.
Yeah. They're kids playing D&D, growing out of D&D.
Right. Man, and him, just an aside, Billy calling out the kid in the first episode, just halting all activity at the pool so he could just berate one little guy.
Yeah.
That was just good television.
Yes, it was. Is that the kind of teenager you grew up to be?
No, horrified of that guy for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, it makes for good television.
Yeah, I would have been the lard ass. Except he would have called me skinny ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, skinny ass. Yeah. So let's get into the second episode a little deeper. This is the Big Time Mall episode. We kind of touched on it. It's actually called The Mall Rats, but that title's also a nod to the rats in the basement, in the ladies' basement, who are exploding and then turning into something else, which we don't, in episode two, you don't get to see what that something else is.
Yeah, Miss Driscoll. She's got something going on.
Miss Driscoll. Did you remember her name or did you have to look that up?
I may have something pulled up here.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then what struck me about this episode, kind of low key, something that struck me is how Will keeps asking, okay, can we go play D&D now? Can we just go back?
Yeah, the whole thing is setting up. I saw David Allen that we both know from Tuscaloosa days.
Okay, yeah.
He put something up about if season one, I won't finish this thought, but he kind of, because there may be spoilers, but season one was dealing with basically a metaphor for childhood illness. You know, somebody, one of your friends going, and I felt that pretty acutely having my own history of not me being sick, but friends who were, at times that was really hard to watch, but this season clearly setting up for this weird transition into adulthood where, you know, it's true to form. Like some of your friends grow up faster, but especially this poor kid who has been, you know, he's kind of out of it for two seasons. Like a lot of the adventures he either had to survive on his own or he was like kind of conscious, but not really. And now he's kind of behind on, for all that horrifying life experience, he doesn't have the same experiences that his three buddies did.
He's kind of behind on maturing emotionally, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I related to him just saying, hey, can we not, let's just go back and play this thing. We didn't play Dungeons and Dragons where I was from. My group of friends didn't, but I totally related to him saying, hey, can we just go do the thing we used to go do?
Yeah, I mean, surely everybody has some moment, whether it's with your friends or whatever, where you're kind of like, man, can we just press pause here for a second when you're, I don't know, 13, 14?
Can we just go listen to Weird Al's Mind Bologna?
Exactly, exactly.
So there's another thing about Will that, and again, I hate to keep saying this, but I'm only two episodes in, but I kind of rolled my eyes, I kind of cringed at his sensation, his neck prickling at the, because I was like, don't go back to torturing Will again. We've milked that cow. You know what I mean?
Right. He's been through it.
Yeah. I wanted it kind of as a narrative standpoint, like don't do that again. But also in a, I like that character. I was like, I want to get to know him. I don't want him to be sidelined and laying in a bed the rest of the season again. So a little of both, but I'll find out more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It, the reunion of the fellas, which, you know, that's even a little short change. We haven't really talked about Dustin yet.
No, we haven't.
How he kind of splinters off from the crew. You know, it was the four running pretty, you know, through thick and thin,
yeah,
unless one of them was unconscious or in some alternate reality.
Oh, no, he and Steve now, are buds now. They're
him and Steve.
Yeah, he and Steve are, they're dudes.
Let me ask you this about that, and this is something that I thought about a lot while we were watching. Do you think, you know, that relationship went over so well? You know, you talked about all of your social media talking about Stranger Things.
Right.
This him and Steve link up. I mean, is it a case of those two actors have great chemistry? I mean, they're really funny to watch together. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a fan favorite. How do you, what do you think the decision is there for them to really kind of turn it into a, you know, early on kind of a buddy cop kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, I get frustrated when I feel like the writers turn something into fan fiction, or writers turn something into just pleasing fans.
Right.
That annoys me. I want writers to be good writers. That's what I want from my shows or books or whatever, movies. And this one plays like they recognize how great their chemistry is, and it just so happens it fits with what the fans like. I love it. I love those two guys together. It cracks me up. And because it's realistic, there's something about it that reminds me of childhood, that I had the 4-year-old older friend that would come by and pick me up, even though I wasn't old enough to drive. You know, I'd be 14, 15, and they would take me to wherever, and we'd hang out.
Yeah.
My curfew would be a lot earlier, but, you know, that was a realistic thing, that to have the older friend. And because Steve is such a likable character now, I'm all for it. So that fan fiction stuff, it can piss me off, but I dig it. What about you?
Well, I was thrilled. I'm with you. It feels accurate. That weird point in time where like 3 or 4 years age difference is dramatic, but also not, you still, like, they may have gone, I guess they didn't go to high school together. Steve would have graduated, and then they were probably about to be freshmen, maybe.
I think that would have to be the case.
I'm not sure, but that strange overlap of, like, you know, coming out of childhood on the one side with Dustin and then about to need to go into adulthood kicking and screaming on Steve's side.
Yeah.
But for that brief moment in time, they're kind of sharing a space. And I thought it was great. Like his coworker, you know, giving him hell about how many children are you friends with
when
Dustin shows back up. That was so great.
Great line.
But I'm all for them trying to decipher Russian and being saved by coworker Robin, all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah, she's a welcome addition. Last season, I felt the Max character and the Billy character were forced. I was like, we didn't need these characters. I wanted to get to know the four kids more, and Elle.
Yeah, there was a lot left because, I mean, Elle hadn't really, she had a lot of growing to do, obviously, in terms of character. And the same with Will, who had been down for the count for a lot of it. Like, how you don't get the, like we talked about, you don't really see them being together like that core group. And this felt a lot more natural to put Robin.
She, the girl who plays Robin is actually Ethan Hawke's daughter. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Maya Hawke is Maya Hawke is her name, and it's Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter. Forget Uma. Yeah. And supposedly a lot of people can see it when they watch it after they figure that out. So I'll keep my eye open for that, if I can really see Ethan Hawke or Uma Thurman in her.
Interesting. That's the trivia that you come to this podcast for.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that might be all we can say about Stranger Things 2 episodes in. And I just want to add, you got any more thoughts on the first 2 episodes?
I mean, you know, I think maybe touching quickly on Mike's poor sister, You know, Nancy and Jonathan are really kind of, the Hawkins Post is not a happy place to work.
Yeah, Natalie's investigating the rats. So we'll probably talk on her and Jonathan a little bit more if we return to Stranger Things later down the road.
That's a good one to maybe just to leave out in the air there, and we'll pick that up later.
All right. Well, we'll take a pause, we'll take a break here, and folks, if you have to break up with someone, is there a better way to do it than saying I dump your ass? I mean, that's keep that in mind. We're going to pause here, and we're going to come back and talk about Years and Years HBO show. So we'll pause.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. Normally this would be an advertising break, so if you have a company, business, or fellow podcast you'd like to advertise with Taking It Down, give us a shout. In the meantime, don't forget about the Alabama Take's main podcast, conveniently named The Alabama Take. You can find it where you found this one, which is to say it's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all other podcast locales. Plus, visit The Alabama Take at thealabamatake.com. That's our main website, or follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and there's a YouTube page out there too, which we hope to get some more things going on. Lastly, if you have questions, thoughts, comments, positive affirmations, send those to our email at thealabamatake@gmail.com. That's one word, thealabamatake@gmail.com. All right, let's get back into it.
Okay, we're back. It's me. It's Adam again. We're going to be talking about HBO's pretty new show, Years and Years. And just a heads up, this one's hard to talk about without spoiling. I don't think we could get into this much without spoiling the... definitely episode one. So we'll just go ahead and say we're going to spoil episode one and two. That's the only two that have been aired on HBO in America, though I'm sure some people can find the whole series because it was a BBC initially.
Right. And the original release, it's not an old show even by on the BBC. It started on the 14th of May and just wrapped up on the 18th of June. So it's a current program for them. They must have just HBO picked it up when the BBC was done. Well, was kind of humanized these far flung scenarios. And so now in this program, Years and Years, it's kind of horrifying to see him turn that to like just one of those like Black Mirror slightly dystopian futures, you know, like just a little bits off. It's very disconcerting.
Yeah. Well, okay. Exactly. It's disconcerting. Let's go ahead and if you've listened this far, here's where the spoilers start. So episode one starts out pretty banal, right?
Yeah. I mean, it opened, it was kind of the, it made me think of like a Bizarro Newsroom. Did you watch that show?
Yep, I did. I watched almost all of that.
That first episode where they kind of lay out their thesis where he's at the debate or whatever, and he has his line, America's not great, but it can be, or it should be, or whatever he says, you know, that everything kind of follows that. And now you have this woman who's on this talking head program, and they open and everybody's kind of texting each other like, hey, are you watching this? This Viv Rook character.
Yeah. Viv Rook, right? She's on your classic political roundtable discussion show, played by Emma Thompson, by the way. She is the biggest star of the whole show, and she's not on screen a lot to be such a big name. But she says, she's asked about Palestine and Israel, and she says, I don't give a fuck. And that's supposed to be kind of Trumpian.
Gotta be, based on what happens next.
Just Trumpian in the way that she's just shooting from the hip, and she's maybe not even a real politician, and she's going to say what she thinks.
Yeah, kind of thing, and the right? Classic, you know, I could go in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and nobody would care. That whole attitude of, you know, just give me attention and I'll turn it to the good for me.
Yeah. And that takes you into a hospital scene. And this is, I think, where you talked about the guy giving the thesis. It's a guy.
Well, my thesis idea was really when she says that she doesn't give a fuck about the conflict. It's like everything kind of that inciting incident because they all start texting each other. And
and so we got
that slow reveal of this shockingly close family you know, to be that, like, I don't know, I'm an only child, so maybe this exists more than I think it does, but.
Yeah, I think so.
They all are immediately like a pretty tight friend group made up of very different people, start pinging this text around. And as a viewer, you kind of slowly put together everybody's relationship.
Yep. And we've got Daniel. He is a gay man and he's there with his partner and they live together. And then we have his sister who's about to have a baby. Interestingly enough, she has spina bifida, which kind of confused me for a little bit because sometimes she was walking and sometimes she wasn't. Right. So if you made it this far in the podcast and you still haven't watched it, don't let that confuse you because we still haven't gotten to the big spoiler yet. And then we've got their grandmother. They've got another sister who's off in another country doing some kind of reporting or activism.
They're not real clear on that at first.
Mm-mm. And then we got one, the older brother who's got, who's married with two girls and they're pretty normal type of family. I think they might be higher end family, higher end in the socioeconomic.
They seem to both be in finance somehow and they live in London. And I think maybe that's one of the rubs is that they're in London, which, you know, to borrow their word, would be the posh version of an English life. And everybody else is still in Manchester. They're a Manchester-based family, which the first time that I went over to England, Lee Baines, I talked to him right before I went, and he said, you just got to think of it as the U.S. kind of flipped. You know, like the South is the North. So Northern England being a little bit more... maybe rough around the edges. Not Southerners are known for hospitality and all these things, whatever, but kind of a more conservative place, but a lot of heart of gold kind of people. You know what I mean? That stereotype. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of playing with that a little bit.
Okay. I gotcha. That does help because then you start to get more information as the show goes on. And again, it starts almost boring. I don't want to shit on it because all these things are important that are happening in the first 45 minutes or 40 minutes because suddenly a few things start happening and some cracks start to show. One of them is we've got Daniel. He is, he seems to be working for the government, helping house refugees.
Right.
And this is where you start to see some things reveal themselves.
Right. I think,
first of all, we've got a time jump. We're in 2024.
Right. And one of the first things that I think you were going to reference as the big jumping off point is they look at this baby immediately after it's born and they say, what is the world going to look like to you or for you in 20, 15, 10, 5 years? And then they jump 5 years.
That's right. And we get that jump. We get Daniel working for the government. He's housing refugees, and the refugees are coming from the Ukraine because Russia has been taking it over. Am I getting that right?
Two for two on these shows with the Russians being just up to something.
Yeah, I don't know where they get these plot lines.
It's, a truly dystopian show would be that they've taken over our election process. That would be truly horrifying.
Thank God that hasn't happened. Phew. So we get 2024. And so Daniel working for the government housing refugees because there's one particular refugee named Victor who is there in the UK because he has been tortured for being gay.
Yeah.
And then we get
turned in by his parents, no less. So
yeah, they felt like it was the right thing to do.
Victor has a bit of baggage for sure, but seems to be taken in stride.
And as you might could guess, they fall for each other. They're starting to fall for each other.
For sure.
That comes a little later. But then, so we get all of our main characters together, other than Victor, who's at the refugee housing. But we get all our main characters together, this family, this close-knit family. They're celebrating Grandma's birthday, as they are been doing. It's shown throughout the years. And they all get messages on their phones, on the TV. Everything's interrupted. You want to take us into this? What's happening?
Yeah. First, kudos to Muriel, right? Is the grandmother's name. This is apparently her 92nd birthday. She's looking pretty good for 92. She's bouncing around.
Stellar.
This is quite a. You get a lot of generations under one roof, and even the house itself. You know, maybe that's something they hit on in the second episode, but
it is.
It's kind of falling apart, and it's you know, the grandmother's father owned it and lost it in some sort of bad business dealing in the 70s. They don't have the money to fix their own house. So they kind of just like patch it together as things appear, and wait to, they know the house will outlive them. It's kind of a, I don't know. That seems important, you know?
I didn't pick up on it, some of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. That comes later, I think. But they're all together at this house.
Yep.
And Edith, the, you know, missed sister who the kids seem kind of fascinated with. Like, she's the interesting aunt who doesn't work in finance and isn't living in Manchester, calls them. All their phones are going off at the same time. And I talk about Stranger Things, remembering that being a kid. I definitely remember being a kid and being inside and watching TV while the adults did whatever, you know, in that one room of the house. So they're all doing that. Turns out Trump has decided to nuke China. This kind of, it's a man-made island, right? So he's not like nuking mainland China. It's this disputed territory.
And that's almost our ending and the reaction, so that we get a few quick reactions of Trump, President Trump, elected to his second term, and he has decided to bomb this island, which they think is a military island for China.
Yep.
Wow. And it'll blow you away, right? When that happened, I thought to myself, I wish I would have paid attention more the first 35 minutes of this show, because they dropped major hints.
They did. It all seemed to be building towards this. And, you know, you mentioned that you had an interest in the show. You were kind of maybe even playing with your phone, whatever, through the first bit. Yeah. And then all of a sudden this hook sets and there it is. It doesn't get more intense and must watch than nuclear war, right?
No, it raises the stakes of everything, right? So, the big hint that I recalled was that they said, well, he only has four, talking about Trump, he only has four more days left in office. There's no telling what he's going to do.
Yeah. Which,
and then
I'm not, yeah, I left like thinking about the show, like, why am I watching this? This is like, this is the news, you know? It's kind of terrifying. Yeah. And it's especially damning to think about. This is British people thinking about our impact on them and the world. And how they see us. So I don't know. There's a lot to unpack there.
Sure is. And there's that great line early in the episode that says, never in a million years did I thought I'd have to be afraid of America.
Yeah.
So this is truly a British or even a European view of being afraid of America right now, which I wish they didn't have to be.
Yeah.
We'll briefly touch on episode two, because episode two, as it turns out, so that was Trump's end of office, but Mike Pence is president in episode two.
He's taken over. We're now in 2025. So it seems that they're establishing this is maybe it jumps every year. I don't know if that we won't. You can read spoilers for the whole thing online. I haven't done that, but we'll see if that.
Yeah, me either.
If that holds up, a 1 year jump every time. But, you know, the shocking thing about, I mean, I guess as humans, we have to have this ability that a nuclear bomb has fallen and it seems like everything's going to fall apart. But, you know, they say this in the episode, when they bomb Hiroshima the next day, the sun came up, you know, people still had to go to work across the world, even though reality had changed. And all of a sudden you have, you know, they're not really that worried about it. Maybe it's something, the tensions are looming, but you know, life went on.
Yeah. There's a comment in the show that China chose not to respond. So I honestly thought at the end of episode two was going to be almost apocalyptic. And episodes 2, 3, 4 are going to be the demise of civilization, but that's not really it.
Yeah.
Not in that way. It's more of a realistic demise because episode two ends with, what, the banks kind of falling apart in the UK.
Right. And it happens to Stephen, right? Who they have just...
The oldest brother.
He's the Londoner. They seem to be the most financially successful. They just sold their London house for £1.2 million. he makes the mistake of leaving all of the money in a single bank account overnight, because when he has his coffee in the morning, he starts divesting, is that the right word, funds into different, so it can't be touched, but it all goes away. The banks,
all of it, but the amount that would be insured, which is only $85,000 or $80,000.
Right. And I loved his sister just is not having it. She's unimpressed by his hard times, the one with spina bifida, and says, "So give me £85,000 to buy a house and take care of these kids. That'd be fine." You know, he's saying that, you know, how are we going to do this? And clearly it's a great tragedy for them, but I got a lot of joy out of her just being totally unimpressed by the moment.
Right. Because even though they're a close family, they are still in different economic situations.
Yep.
And she lives in a small apartment because you get to see her apartment.
Right. Single mother.
Her sister. Yeah. Her sister comes to visit. Her sister that was in Vietnam and witnessed the whole bomb dropping in the previous episode.
Yep. Which is another thing that comes up. She's been exposed, apparently, in order to get footage of the damage, which I guess she felt was a humanitarian thing to, like, honestly report on what's happening and get that footage while it's going on. So to get their drone into position, they had to be X number of miles away from the island, which meant that based on not only proximity, but how the wind was blowing and all these different things, she's been exposed heavily to nuclear fallout.
Yeah. Shout out to Chernobyl, recently aired on HBO. Did you see that?
I've been saving that one. You know, we've been on the road a bunch, so I feel like that's going to be one to plow through now that it's totally finished.
I don't want to reveal too much, but it's about radiation.
Whoa.
So
and Chernobyl? And weird.
Yeah, that's a good one. One of the highest rated shows of the year on IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes. So, yeah. You'll have to let me know what you think about that once you.
I'm going to jump in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. So we'll just briefly touch. Victor, the Ukrainian refugee, is sent back because Daniel's ex kind of rats him out. He finds that he's working at a job at a gas station, basically, is what we'd call it. And he's shipped back. We've got the collapse of the economy or the banks. I don't know about that. And we'll find out more about the economy. And this will take us into episode 3, I suppose.
Yeah. It's definitely a setup that things are not good. And it ends with old Viv Rook being elected MP in Manchester.
Yep. Back where it starts with the lady who said she doesn't give a fuck. It's such a weird thing to do to have her so minor but important, if that makes any sense. That sounds like a dichotomy that doesn't quite fit. But
well, any time that you have that setup of like a name like that, like Emma Thompson coming in, you just have to assume that if they're not in it that much at the beginning, then something is looming, right?
Absolutely.
You would think. Or maybe you just want that power for those moments. Who knows? Who knows where it's going?
So how in are you on this series? Is this a must watch for you?
I mean, I'm going to keep watching it for sure. And I think I told, it was either you or our buddy Jeff that it's like a really engrossing show. You can't look away. I'm not sure how good of a show it is in the grand scheme of things. You know, like, will I look back and think, well, that was one of the better shows I watched this year? I don't know, but I definitely was not checking my phone after the bomb dropped and then on through episode 2. So
yeah, that second episode really flowed smoothly. I was much more invested. And maybe it has a lot to do with me getting to know the characters. That's probably important, and my attention span is at fault. But
it's a daunting thing to figure, because when it first opens, you have people that very different age groups and socioeconomic stuff going on. It's like, how does this all fit together? And then after they're all together at the party, it kind of makes a little more sense who everybody is. And that, I'm with you. It was much easier to kind of latch on to folks and root for them, or, you know, whatever, have interest in them as a character.
And I went back and watched that first episode, and it's much better than I initially gave it credit for the first time around. So But if anyone's listened this far to the podcast, they probably have either watched it or are just curious. But it's not as easy of a hang as Stranger Things, but it's interesting.
No, it has none of the nice rosy gloss that Stranger Things does. You know what I mean? It's pretty full on for most of it, dealing with even before the nuclear bomb, there were, you know, the refugees to deal with and a tough single mother situation. And, you know, it's just all, and even weird kind of Black Mirror-esque things happening, like with the robot. We didn't talk about the robot.
The robot.
Well, just if you've seen it, then we'll just mention the robot and move on. The things are kind of, you know, you slightly, or you get just that slight fray from reality that kind of starts spinning us off into this new, the reality of the show, which is very Russell T. Davies.
Yeah, it's a real reality. It's a real, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like that, you know, if one thing goes different on one day, where does that land you in 15 years? You know what I mean? I think that's kind of what they're setting up.
Yeah, and we're talking about here in our reality, like what it could end up like this without much butterfly effect. You know?
No, it would take so little, which is maybe part of the effectiveness and the how horrifying this show can be at times.
Yeah. All right. Years and Years on HBO. I think it airs on Monday nights. I, of course, DVR it. So, catch that if you want. And it's a horror show. It's a modern day horror. So, all right. Anything else?
That's it for me. I look forward to, I guess we'll do a few more episodes of Stranger Things next time and talk some more about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we may touch on some more. We may come back, circle back around to Stranger Things in Years and Years maybe, or we may move on to whatever's in the public consciousness because it moves at a rapid pace.
Maybe some Andy Griffith next time. How about that?
Yeah. We'll just touch on Andy. All right, kids. We'll see you next time.
Well, that's it for Taking It Down. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to visit our website, follow us on social media, and of course, subscribe to this podcast and to the main podcast, which is called The Alabama Take. You'll find both of this one and the main podcast wherever you find your podcast. You know, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. If you'd like, leave us a review on iTunes and reach out to us at thealabamatake.com or at our email, which is thealabamatake@gmail.com, all one word. If we get enough, we may do a mailbag episode down the line. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more discussions about things that we've noticed in pop culture. Thanks for tuning in. See ya. With the friendship spiel, you'd think a boy.